This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita!
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
There's no better feeling than a personal win. And the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Here every week, win, lose, or draw. Talking all things United. This is the United People's Podcast.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the United People's Podcast. We're here after another couple of defeats. Ooh, man, we are having some cracking pods and cracking talking points here. We've got Palace losing to them 1-0, and then the utter carnage, really, that was that game against Galatasaray. United now lost 6 out of 10. I think it's the worst start to the season in like 30, 40 years. It's Sam, it's Jake, it's Bao. We're here to try and dissect everything and kind of ask questions, really, about United. And talk about Ten Hag and whether there's questions to be asked about him. Bao, you're going to come with some detailed insight and some hilarious entertainment in this podcast, aren't you? Just to cheer everybody up.
Yeah, so I think given how you... It just took my mind back to how you started a podcast back in May. So it only feels like we do a bit of like Eminem in 8 Mile and kind of take the piss out of ourselves.
There we go, mate.
Nah. I'm not enjoying this. You stop it.
I think I recall that pod. It was, did we play Chelsea and finish in a Champions League spot? And yeah. he played the Champions League music. And yeah. How?
Mate, if you don't laugh, you might, you genuinely might cry at this point. You might. But it's look, let's. I want to go back and talk about Palace game first. Then we'll speak about Galatasaray. We'll speak about Ten Hag, and then we'll speak about the Brentford game. But that Palace game, right? Look, Ten Hag's had bumps. Did you see his press conference? The way he pronounced humps and bumps cracked me. He's like humps and bumps. I don't know why, but it just made me laugh. So I've got that stuck in my head now. The United have gone
like Chris Miller trying to swear in his man accent.
But look, there have been plenty of hoops and boops. And after, you know, it was a scrappy win against Burnley and it was a pretty confident win, you could argue, against a slightly reduced Palace team. I think we all went into that Palace game at the weekend with a genuine little bit of optimism, a little bit of hope. And Jake, you've called this a few times. I think I look at games differently now. The first 20 minutes happened. United were on top. The goal didn't come. And then just from that point on, it kind of felt like a sense of inevitability. And it was just a really crappy goal to concede. It was a proper like once in a lifetime hit from Anderson. A little deflection. Can't really do much about that. But Amrabat shouldn't have been conceding the easy set piece. And United just... did you feel that after we went 1-0 down that we would come back? Or did you feel that... It almost feels like this team just doesn't deal with any sort of adversity. And it's not a... We don't deal with adversity at all.
I mean, Palace under Roy Hodgson, when they get lead, it's easy to kind of then set up for the rest of the game, and they do have so much pace on the counter-attack with like both the wingers either side that you can't just necessarily push everyone forward and provide a massive onslaught until quite late. I didn't think that onslaught ever really came, but yeah, I mean, it must get boring listening to me talk about the first 20 minutes of United games and how that's going to, really change things. But it was so typical. I said in the last one, the first 20 minutes is going to kind of show us how the game's going to go. And as soon as that 20 minutes hits, the crowd changes, the ground, everything in the ground changes, the mood, the players. And then for them to hit us so soon after, I think it was about 25 minutes, it's just like a dagger, isn't it? So, it was then an uphill battle. And I think there was a couple of chances of note, but, you know, we haven't created that much. We haven't made their keeper work.
Nah, not much at all, man. Like, but what was that? I don't remember too many chances of note. It was a game where, look, we'll have a little section on Rashford, because that chance that he didn't take against Galatasaray is like just the epitome of a player that is bereft of confidence. I think it was last year. Do you remember we played Leicester at home? And then there was a ball that went over the top to Rashford. And he was like one-on-one with a keeper, kind of a similar position down the other end, and just rifled it right into the bottom corner. Rashford was kind of heads down, really, against Palace. But it wasn't just him. And this is something that, Bal, I'll ask you this. It's something that's been thrown at Ten Hag as a criticism, is that lack of identity. And it almost feels that United are sort of, we're kind of stuck between two. We're kind of stuck between... it's like in one game we're trying to go for like a bit of possession and a bit of patient build up, and then you look at the Galatasaray game, which was a complete flip, like it was 100 mile an hour football. I think that's Ten Hag trying to do something differently and trying to get different results, but the players definitely look a bit confused. That's the way it comes across.
Yeah, I mean, you've got players playing out of position, players deputising in certain positions, but like Lindelof probably wouldn't expected this many run of games he's had. Then further up the field, you've got Hoyland, like massive breath of fresh air, as we've seen yesterday, but frustrating game like Saturday where we've got no idea how to play with a centre forward. It was like, give this guy service. Soon as we started playing balls in and around his chest and he could hold defenders off and bring others into the game, suddenly he looked a threat. Other than that, he was just a passenger due to no fault of his own. That was due to his teammates around him not being able to think or figure, okay, I think last night will probably show them, okay, well, we definitely have got something quite good here. So let's use him. Let's play off him.
Yeah.
Because he's not only going to create much more space for the team, but much more space for everybody else around him as well.
Mate, it's just the Palace game was pretty... the Brighton game, Brighton defeat was humiliating. And that Palace defeat just kind of... It kind of felt like... You felt a little bit apathetic about it towards the end. Like there was genuine boos in Old Trafford. It kind of... When we went 1-0 down, there wasn't too many United fans, I think, that had massive hope that we were going to turn it around, given how few goals we scored this year. Apart from the Champions League, where we've somehow managed to score 5 goals in 2 games and come away with 0 points, which is just a bit of a madness. Like, I don't know how you summarize that game against Galatasaray. Again, Jake, I'm looking at the first 20. I'm seeing United coming out. Ten Hag clearly went for a different approach completely. Like, Casemiro was effectively playing one-touch football in midfield. I'm not sure he had to. It was any time he got the ball. I think we spoke about this a while ago, didn't we? You know, those whipped balls around the corner, the kind of ones that Pogba used to do, where he wasn't looking. He just knew that if he sent a ball quickly with a bit of whip into the certain areas, that somebody would probably get on the end of it. That's kind of what Casemiro was looking for. And it led to the goal, which was a fantastic goal. Rashford down the right, head up, rifled it in. He looked up just before, knew where Hoyland was. Hoyland got on the end of it. Can we focus on a positive of Hoyland before we go into the carnage of the rest of the game? Mate, he looks like a prospect, man.
But I think, Bal touched upon his hold-up play and his link-up play yesterday, which was absolutely fantastic. But that was because the game at every stage was at a different kind of pace and stage than the Palace. As soon as Palace got ahead and they set up in a block, he didn't have an ability to come and link up play because they were just sitting so deep. Like, who was he going to link to? Whereas actually Galatasaray is still, we go 1-0 up, so they have to come out a little bit. You know, they're not going to go for it madly. Then at 1-1, they're not defending a lead. Then we go 2-1. So he's always got a bit of opportunity to kind of like play off, bring players in. I think the first goal was absolutely brilliant all round. I think, like, that's technically why Rashford's out there out wide. It's a brilliant ball in. And I think we spoke about it before. He's, if you look, even when he's out of form, Rashford, a lot of the time his stats in regards to being in goal contributions, whether it's an assist, whether it's the second pass to get through,
yeah.
He's usually involved. He's taken defenders away. I thought the ball was brilliant and the header to control it, like coming across that quickly when the ball, like, yeah, really, really good. It looks simple, doesn't it? It really looks simple, but yeah, it's not.
I mean, the irony is if Rashford was on the left, one, he probably doesn't play that ball the way he did. And two, we probably don't score from it. And the irony is he doesn't like playing on the right.
Yeah, but mate, when you look at that, when you think about that, Rashford at this moment in time, the thing that he's really struggling with is squaring up to a defender. What he did last season so well was he did use a bit of skill here or there, but he would always be able to knock it past and drive. And I think something that's hurting Rashford is not having Luke Shaw on the overlaps, because we've got Amrabat playing there right now, who's not a left back. We've seen that in the last couple of games. He's made some bad mistakes because he's a defensive midfielder playing out of position. It happens.
But they've also reverted to you doing it last night, playing as an inverted fullback.
Exactly, that's my point.
So he's tucking in, and then Lindelof going wide. So we've lost that natural width.
Exactly, that width hasn't existed on the left all season long, which I definitely think has contributed to Rashford struggling. Maybe you look at that and go, well, maybe Rashford should be playing on the right hand side, because then he can just get a cross in on his right foot, on his stronger foot, without really thinking, which is kind of what he did there for Højlund, and it worked. Do you see Rashford maybe coming out on the right-hand side because of what you saw against Galatasaray, or was that just kind of a one-off?
No, I think the thing with Galatasaray is that because of the way that the ball's played, he's in acres and acres of space. So the kind of runs that you're talking about isn't necessarily correlating to last night. That's a ball through, no defender there. If he had a defender standing him up, it's exactly the same as he is on the other side, but he almost reduces his options because he's not going to come in and cut in on his left like Anthony. He's always really going to go on his right-hand side. So you're always going to be sending him down, whereas when he's on the other side, he can cut in on his right and use Luke Shaw as an overload or whoever it might be, the fullback.
I've said it for a while. I don't think he possesses a natural football brain compared to, even he's not in the squad, but a Jadon Sancho. You can see the way Sancho sees spaces and plays passes. He sees things. Like that pass to Bruno yesterday. One, okay, fine, you don't have the confidence to take it on, but you've got to articulate that ball across the box where you've got to play it onto his run. And he ends up playing not even into his stride or in front. He plays it behind him, which then gives Bruno absolutely no chance whatsoever.
And there's no pace on that ball whatsoever. Yeah. Like, it's almost like he underhits it, thinking, well, I don't want to overhit it. I want to give him some sort of chance. But yeah, like, a really... the thing is, I don't know if either of you thought, and it's all right saying it after, but not once when he went through did I actually think he's going to score here. Whereas actually, if he was on the left-hand side, he would have taken that for himself.
I never back him through on goal because... Very, very rarely do you see a controlled finish, a placed finish. I remember you were saying, Jake, in a lot of his goals have come like that, but you mentioned the Leicester goal, Sam, last season, where he's gone clean through and he literally has just put his foot through the ball.
Yeah, and when it works, it's a scorching finish.
He also done that way at Northampton, but there was no goalkeeper in the net and he was 1 yard out.
Yeah, I remember that.
Look, right, mate, you mentioned it there, the underhit pass. I've got to speak about the Onana pass because Onana is, look, man, I've been getting pelters in the last like 48 hours. I think rightfully so, because I kept saying that Onana is going to be a transformative signing and it's been far from it at the moment. And I mean, the Onana thing, right, I can't get my head around it because he played in the Champions League final last year. He's an experienced, mature goalkeeper. I would have put him in probably the top 10 goalkeepers in the world last season. And he comes to United. Is it the pressure of playing for United? What is it that's causing Onana? Because I know that we haven't got the right defence playing in front of him. We haven't got the right midfield playing in front of him. But that pass there is just, you know, like you're saying, Rashford, he just doesn't have the confidence to put his foot through it. It's a very simple ball to Casemiro that he does in his sleep. But he's just done to hit it. and it just gets intercepted, Casemiro gets a red card, game changes.
I mean, there was a time yesterday in commentary they were saying that the ball was now starting to zip off. I think there was an incident when a cross has come off the right and it's bounced in front of him and he's kind of flapped it away because of how it's fallen off the ground. Maybe he thought there was enough pace on it. But it's not so much that that's worrying me. If you look at a lot the goal he conceded against Forest and yesterday one, he just falls over. And then the Palace goal, that ball didn't go in the top corner. And he's actually his starting position. He's crouched down. So then when he's fully stretched, he's not as tall as he should be because there's no reason for him to be so low.
Jake, as an experienced top-level goalkeeper, you can probably give some advice to Onana that might improve his game here.
Well, you heard about my penalty save the other week. You know, but,
humble brag.
The five that I conceded, we don't forget about those. Footwork is massive for a goalkeeper. And he hasn't shown that bit of footwork where you kind of get that extra yard. And then almost what happens is you're not diving outstretched. You think you're outstretched, but you're actually almost just falling over from your leg position on the floor. And that's kind of how a couple of those goals look to me. So he doesn't get across at all. It looks a really good finish. That Brian one looks a really good finish at first, but actually, I think, there's a lot of goalkeepers that would have saved that quite comfortably. And I think last night, like, when I look at Onana, he's comfortable. It's not whether he's comfortable, it's whether the team's comfortable of playing 30-40 yard passes out wide and finding his man. But he doesn't seem to be that comfortable in just fizzing one in through to Lindelof or Varane or whoever may be our centre-back.
This is the thing. Like, he absolutely is. Like, that is why Ten Hag signed him. It's like, that is probably the greatest strength that he's got. And it currently looks like a weakness.
The issue is teams aren't coming up. What United want is come and press us because we've got somebody who can play it from the back. So teams are just coming and backing off him. Why are we going to go and press you? Go and hit it out to the fullbacks or hit it long. We'll take that chance. Very, very rarely, the amount of time he gets, which is that where that Galatasaray player yesterday, the one who scored the second player, he just kept finding himself in that half-yard space between the midfield and the defence. And every time the possession turned over, he's in acres of space.
Well, if you have a look, one of the things that you kind of learn, if you're a team that presses, one of the things you learn is to kind of like press in your lanes. So you split the pitch five lanes, et cetera, and then it's just a trigger point. And you could see that all last night. And again, that moment is the Galatasaray striker kind of says, go on, pass it out there. But as soon as you don't, I'll close the gap 5 yards. And then you close all your options. And all of a sudden, because he doesn't want to play too far, he chooses Casemiro as an option. But actually, he's now got 5 yards less either side to be able to play the ball. And it's so much easier to cut it off.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh, how so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at IKEA-USA.com/circular. Visit IKEA-USA.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
Find us across social media, a United People's TV.
Mate, it's like last night again, it's not the first time it's happened. Like, Højlund bags his first goal and it's a fantastic goal. And you think, great, first 20 minutes. And within 4 minutes, it was a very simple ball through the middle. Delow just gets held off by Zaha. It was just, it was good strength.
Let it bounce, first of all, which is
cardinal error. He let Zaha command all of that situation.
That is woeful.
It was awful. And it was unlucky in the fact that it was just a deflection that bounced off the floor and then over Onana. But
because he's allowed the ball to bounce originally, we all know that someone could shoot, it's going wide, it could go, like, it takes a deflection, goes in. He's allowed Zaha to get in a position 12 yards from goal or 16 yards from goal. When all he had to do was come and engage early, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, but it was just another one of those, like, we score, we concede after 4 minutes. And that second goal from Højlund, it felt like the sort of goal where I can't remember a United player, just like, just all it was pure raw power, straight pace, strength, and a lovely little dinked finish. And you're thinking, mate, Old Trafford was bouncing. Old Trafford was really rocking last night for about 10 minutes before that goal. It felt like the crowd was really trying to help the players, and it worked, and we got the goal, and then we did it all again. And United, so look, as I said, Amrabat gets a hall pass because he's playing out of position. But for that second goal, it was what you were saying there, Bal, about that guy operating in the half spaces. So our whole defence was lined up together. They had a throw on, and Amrabat just aggressively pressed his man. The player just let the ball go through. He spun Amrabat, went down the line, and that's where we led to the cutback, which keeps happening for United. It just feels like, do you think that's a, is that coming from Ten Hag? Like the style of football that we were playing in the first half, the almost chaotic one-touch football, really, really quick in the transition. Is that coming from Eric, or is that the players doing it? And like Amrabat going against his man so aggressively there, whereas you've just scored, you kind of just need to stay in shape for 5 minutes and just make sure you don't concede, because it's happened so often, and it's almost predictable now. You score a goal now, and then you're like, oh, mate, oh, please don't. Please don't.
Imagine what the opposition go together.
Oh, there you go. Cool.
No worries.
Guaranteed. Next 5 minutes, it's a banker. But it was again, and it was just, how does Ten Hag, like, this Brighton game is an absolute, Brentford, absolutely can't lose. We cannot lose that game. And they've had I think they're lower than us in the league table, which is showing how up and down their season's been. How do we change it? Like, how do we get on top of this? Because I don't think Ten Hag's under any threat of getting sacked. I think the conversation is just futile. However, Erik Ten Hag is not exempt from criticism anymore. As much as I know that the injuries have definitely played a part of it, okay, there's just mistakes that keep repeating themselves, and that's when I have a problem with things. Like, if you make mistakes once, it happens in football, right? You make the same mistake continuously, I think the coach can be doing more. And that's kind of where I feel about these goals that we keep conceding after we score.
Yeah. I mean, coming back onto yesterday, the change to take Rashford off Garnacho on, I think, was planned. But then I think Jip pointed out today in the chat, okay, when you suddenly score 2-1, okay, the impetus is on them now. Now, Garnacho naturally is probably going to offer you less off the ball than Rashford, given his experience, and probably going to be more eager to show what he can do. So I think I agreed in the sense that you always see when there's a big goal happens, a manager doesn't rush into making a decision. Okay, let's just see the next 5 or 10 minutes out. And it comes back to what we've been saying all season. It's just that lack of control of a game where we can say, you know what, let's just keep our foot on the ball for the next 10 minutes. And then if we score in that period, because they're going to have to come out, great, the game's done. But let's not fucking go and shoot ourselves in the foot again.
Oh, mate, we shot. How many times did we shoot ourselves? I think we shot ourselves. We have no toes left in that game after Galatasaray. Like the penalty, and then Icardi missed. But then the third goal, a clearance from United, a header that went straight back through the middle. And Icardi was in like 10 yards of room all around him. And he just jogged forward. Like you said there, like, again, Onana is a goalkeeper that's known for being aggressive off his line. But he was stuck. He was just completely frozen. And he didn't know what to do. And it was the easiest of dinks. Kind of like the Forest goal, actually, wasn't it?
That, yeah, that Forest goal is still so bad. I think the equaliser, as I said, is selling yourself. But it's kind of, as we are now, we're getting punished every single time for that. You know, the ball getting slipped through Varane's legs after, you know, that. And then, I mean, the touch and the finish is absolutely superb, to be fair. Then that third one, Amrabat just has to play it centrally to one of the defenders. It's quite comfortable. He decides, no, I'm going to knock it long, which, you know, being down to 10 men may have made that decision for him. And then, yeah, like you say, I think just Lindelof and Varane have just completely switched off, like, both of them. And the header just goes straight through. And
when you're down to 10 men and the ball's dropped so deep for Amrabat, as your two centre-halves next to him, you can't just leave him there on his own. You've got to then kind of, okay, well, something comes back. We need to be in line with him, because otherwise he's playing all of us offside, on side, their team. And that's essentially what happened.
And it's almost like they haven't, again, that ball skipping off the surface, like for the second goal, where Amrabat hasn't read that that ball's going to just flick. If the third goal is the same, the ball comes off the surface so quickly because of the angle that the headers come in. And then, I don't place all the blame on Onana because, like, as the striker's coming in, as the ball kind of gets tucked under his feet, there's only one place he can go. He can't go the other way because he would just end up falling over himself. So your natural reaction is to go, right, he can only go that way. Well, go that way. And then he's just sold himself. And look, the chip is absolutely superb. But if he stands up for half a second longer, he saves it. And the striker's not going to be able to get that much power on it anyway to really trouble Onana in my I'm thinking these things as he's run through. But yeah, to kind of get sat down like that.
Do you think we'll qualify from the group?
My head says no. But looking at the fixtures, then Galatasaray's next two games are Munich at home and Munich away.
Yeah.
You would think that Bayern Munich would take 6 points there and seal the group, 12 points after four games, job done. We have to beat Copenhagen home and away, which then takes us to Istanbul on 6 points and Galatasaray on four. And you can go there and you can win the group. Not win the group, sorry. You can go there and by game week five, you can be through by beating them. I'm not saying it's going to be easy or complete, essentially in their backyard as well, where it's going to be hostile as fuck.
Imagine this, mate. This team like quivers when it's windy, let alone going into Galatasaray. Like, they are going to melt.
Galatasaray, it's not the place it was 30 years ago when we went.
It's still a bit too much for these like early learning centre players, man.
Yes, no, I'll give you that. I will give you that. I mean, last night the ground was pretty much all Galatasaray.
Oh, that was a fucking joke. That was a joke. Was it? There was roughly about 1,000, 1,500 Gala fans. They weren't just like on their own. There was like a section of like 300 of them.
Pockets of them everywhere, but...
Well, not exactly how it happened. But yeah, let's try and find out if anything happens. They'll just cover it all up. They'll blame it on touts, which is what they always do. Even though it's them who's touting.
Yeah, £350 and you get this lanyard.
Fuckers, man. Absolute. Look.
It all changes, by the way, last night. The at 2-2, even though we were down to 10 men, Garnacho runs through, gets through, and if you look at the replay, I still think the keeper's going to save that. I think the finish was really poor, but like it's the defender gets in the way. It looks like a fantastic block. If he just puts it the other side of the keeper, it's 3-2 to us, and it could be a completely different night. I know I'm clutching. I really am, but
we've got a clutch, man. We have to clutch at this point.
But that's where he's. Yeah, you touched upon earlier with Rashford. Like Garnacho has always got like that. Well, I'll either get past him or I won't. Like, there's two options here. I'm going to give it a go. There's no real doubt in his mind.
I still do feel that Garnacho, I don't know, I just feel like he, if you leave him on the bench and you bring him on with half an hour, like he's lucky, he's got a bee in his bonnet and he's got a point to prove in his head and he absolutely thrives. And I love him as an impact sub. I still do. But Rashford is, I suppose, oh, he got an assist, man. But if, you're Erik ten Hag, right? What are you changing for the Brentford game? Because you could conceivably make quite a few changes. I think Casemiro's form as geez, man, he's been pretty horrible all season. How he's up for our Player of the Month nomination, I think, is just a bit weird.
Yeah, that one performance against Palace.
No, it's because he scored loads of goals. It's because he scored loads of goals. But Casemiro, you can question, I think, a lot. Onana, there's going to be a lot of people calling for that, but ten Hag will not take. Ten Hag won't take him out of the team.
And then I'm not in Player of the Month, no?
No, he's not, mate. That
surprises me.
Yeah, that surprises you. But do you make any changes for that team that plays Brentford? But I'll come to you first.
I would like to see Amrabat back into midfield, but I just can't see the changes being made in defence. Personally, put Lindelof left back and I'd play Maguire. Play Maguire, what are you going to do? And give yourself that balance in midfield. Like you can see, everything Amrabat did well was pretty much coming into central positions, you can then just tell when he's a centre midfielder playing out wide, suddenly your bearings are different. Like professional football, but I played either left back or left midfield all my life. I played one game in centre midfield, and I was like, whoa, I've got to look in four different directions here. Suddenly the game's different, totally different to what I've known my whole life. And it's a similar thing with that pass he plays. I don't think he plays that from a more central position, because he's not going to be there for starters. Well, a natural left back wouldn't play it.
I suppose, right, if you're looking at Amrabat in his last couple of games where IU had him on toast, just like getting professional fouls, just getting his body in the way of it, and Amrabat was going in a bit too aggressive. I think last two games it's shown that he's not a left back. So how much worse can it be to play? I imagine playing Lindelof at left back will not be an enjoyable watch. However, Amrabat could be a difference maker in actually how United run a game in midfield. I think it might be a risk reward sort of thing.
Is Reguilón, is he injured?
He might be. I think he's been training individually. They don't quite know.
I'd imagine they'll probably earpiece him to come back for the derby. Because after Brentford, he's got 2 weeks off, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Because I doubt he's going to be in the Spain squad.
No, I very much doubt it. But I'm trying to think of the change. I think what I would do, I think we're going to have to go to a proper counter-attacking formation against Brentford. I think we're going to have to try and sit in shape and then just get the balls over the top. As you say, if you get Amrabat in those central positions, he'll be able to find them. We're conceding too easily, man. We're conceding chances too easy. We're conceding goals too easily. Ten Hag wants this team to play better than it's currently capable of. And I think
he's not the only one.
But he's just got, that's what I mean. He's stuck in between styles. Like, he's stuck in between what Ten Hag wants, man, us to play out from the back. You can go and look at Ajax highlights. You can see how they play football. It's you know exactly what he wants. But then you look at the chaos of that Galatasaray game with Hannibal, with Bruno, with Casemiro, and how quickly we were playing it forward. And even Eriksen, when he came on, Eriksen did it really well, but it was still really quick. Get it from here to there as soon as possible.
I said it in the group last night. It was really weird. There was the ball, the ref got in the way at a point.
Twice.
And it was right on the edge of the box. The ref it pulled it back 10 yards, which was really kind of strange to me. He dropped it and Eriksen just like, I have no idea what he did.
Tried to find Bruno on the gap, but messed it up.
It was pathetic.
I'll be honest, Jake. It's a really good point you raised. I think what we should do, it's the only right and just thing to do, is to probably replay that game because of what the ref did there.
I absolutely would.
Yeah, I'm not speaking as a Man United fan. I'm speaking as a football fan.
This is for the greater good of... In fact, I'm probably going to say for greater Britain. I'm not going to say just greatest of Britons. That's why we need to replay that game.
I stuck up for every other club who got a wrong decision.
melt. Look, right, predictions. Do you think United can grind it out and beat Brentford?
I think we'll win purely for the fact that they don't really have an out-and-out striker, and they're probably struggling for goals or creating chances more than we are. And I think that's probably going to be our only saving grace.
Brentford will be slightly more shit than us, is what you're saying?
Yeah.
Sam, what do you think I'm going to say?
I think you're going to go for a 2-1.
No. Why do you think my initial analysis might be on how the game might play out?
I don't know. I think it might have something to do with minutes 0000 to minutes 1959.
Yeah, absolutely. We're gonna start well, and if we get 1-0 up in that period of time, we'll win 3-0.
Mate, Hoyland, can we have a little moment here about Hoyland? Like when was the last time we signed a prospect, someone like that, that comes in and goes woof? Like, he's taken to it. Like, pretty much every game, I think. Slowly been getting better and progressing. 3 goals in his first 2 Champions League games. Technically scored in his Premier League debut, but VAR said no. He's looked good. He's looked really good. We've got a focal point.
If he's a general serious footballer, it's only so long he's going to stay around in a pile of shit like this, where it's just constantly conveyor belt after conveyor belt after manager.
I'm giggling. Guy's played like six games. He's like, thinking about moving. 20 years old going, nah. Back to Copenhagen. If we lose to Copenhagen, I'm going back to Denmark.
Well, his brother plays for Copenhagen.
Well, maybe we signed the wrong one. maybe he will send his brother in his place. But
no, look, man, I've got to back United. I don't know why I've got to back United to win, because, you know, percentage-wise, it's against us. But we need that win, because to go into another two-week international break. And what we've got at the back of it, we've got, is it Copenhagen? When do we play City?
City, the first game back after international is 27th.
It's Sheffield United first.
Oh, yes, Sheffield United, beg your pardon.
Then we've got Copenhagen at home. And then 5 days later, we've got City at home. So
followed by Newcastle at home. So three fucking home games in a week again.
Yeah. I mean,
our record was very, very good.
Yeah, exactly. Alas, that's kind of changed. But at least we're not playing City first, because, well, didn't we do that last time? Wasn't there the huge break? Was it Arsenal? I think it was like 3 weeks between us beating Arsenal at Old Trafford, and then we played City, and then they spanked us. I think am I right?
Yeah, we'd turned it around a bit, hadn't we? And we'd gone on like a 6-7
And then I think the Queen died, and there was a game that got cancelled.
Yeah, it got cancelled away at Palace, maybe.
One that got rescheduled when Casemiro got booked before Arsenal.
Can't believe the Queen died and just took that away from us.
International break came and we went, you know what? We're playing quite well. We may be a juggernaut here. We may go to City. We're 4-0 down in about 9 minutes.
Look, right. Let's hope that we'll come back here on. We'll be back on Sunday, I reckon, to speak about the 4-0 win against Brentford and Hoyland's first hat trick in the Premier League. That'll be delightful. Odds are it might be a 1-0 Johnny Evans 88th minute header. Either way, I'll take it. I'll be honest, at this point, I'll take anything. I'm begging. Look, thanks everyone for tuning in. These are more like therapy sessions now. If you enjoyed it, because you're weird, drop a 5-star review. We'll be back on Sunday, hopefully after a win, because I tell you what, they're a rare breed this season. They really are. A bit like goals. Apart from in Champions League, we can't win.
This is a United People's TV and Listening Dog Media production.
Sports Social Podcast Network.